Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, October 21st, 2014, and this is our 247 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And this hour, sponsored by James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. Thank you very much, James, for your support. And you are hosting all the hours recorded by Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, welcome back. It's when you called, I go, oh my gosh, it's so nice and clear. Always amazed at digital sound.
Take it apart and put it back together. That's what it means.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, that's why it's so clear. There's no distortion over it. You get the bits and you put it back. These are the kinds of things that have to do with the idea that how does, you know, the higher realm work? How does, you know, do we always have this loss of distance, you know, this... Is the signal strength at inversely proportional to the square root of distance, blah, blah, blah. You know, all this kind of stuff. You know, anyway, the whole thing is a matter that it's much clearer when you have a intermediate codified signal, you know.
Oh.
Code, encode, decode. Mm. Call them codex if they're true codex. But there's so many different words they use. These are all, believe it or not, the concept of something called pulse code modulation, which had to do with coding a signal. And since everything was code at one time, you know, like Morse code, somebody thought about using code, pulse code, to send a continuously changing form, and they had broken it down. But it was something that would, you know, you would get a word and then basically give bits and pieces of this word a code for place, amplitude, or time and amplitude. And it's called time division. And it to put it up to, you know, in this, and then they reassemble it on the other side, and it was just would take so much time to piece it together. One, what we hear right now is an instantaneous code-decode much faster than I can speak. But if you were to do what I just take one word, it might have taken a person a whole day to code and decode just one word, you know. And then play it back. But that was invented in the 18, sometimes in when around before before the turn of the century of the 20th century, in 1890s or something. Crazy. So all of this technology was dreamed up much earlier, but they had to have switching capability and stuff like that. So much of what I'm sharing right now, believe it or not, my experience goes back to 1972, approximately. And it wasn't ready to be shared. The knowledge I had wasn't ready to be shared because technology had to catch up to what we have today. And that one of the important things was this type of what you're talking about, this clarity, the ability to store real time. I don't need to write books. I don't need to, have letters sent out, recordings sent out, because the internet is much more mature than when it was first developed. Earlier developments required basically mainframe computers. And basically ended up being nothing more than text format, and sharing text. And that was basically email, very early email forms before it matured. Of course, years ago, I remember when one of my bosses came to me and he asked me, Michael, are we going to see full motion video and stuff like that on things like the data communications we have right now? And I said, of course, we're going to see that. We're going to have it on our phones. Essentially, our cell phones were still, my phone at the time was, the size of a loaf of bread, mm-hmm. kind of held in your hand. And then it got to the size of a hot dog, which is pretty good. But I had one the size of a loaf of bread because you had to have a battery pack with it. And it was a part of the unit. So the handset was the same size as a telephone handset, if you remember those plain old telephones.
Oh, yeah, sure do.
But anyway, everything had to come to that point. And then all of a sudden, everything played back. Can you imagine having your memory turned off on purpose? And then when it gets turned back on, it is like you relive everything in an instant. I often put down how fresh the memory is. It's even fresher than the experience of attending a classroom lesson where you go and sit down, take notes, have your lecturer or whatever goes on in a type of, whether it be hands-on or just, something that you just have a lecture. And you walk out the door and you think what went on in that classroom. And your short-term memory should be pretty active so you can remember details, a lot of details. Can you imagine something that's even fresher than that? It's as if you are reliving it. And when you are pulling these memories out there, they're being reactivated, or relived is the term. And that's how the knowledge that I have was reactivated to the point of crystal clarity. And it was done at a time when, remember, Curtis, when I called you up, where was the internet at that time? Just at this verge where we had podcasting, yeah?
Yes, exactly. It was just starting.
Just starting, right? It was, you had analog devices that interfaced into your, what was, you're still using some of the software, but it's in I don't know how many generations later, but it was at the time relatively new, right?
Well, it was so new. I still had dial up.
Right, you still had dial up.
So when we would record in analog with that analog system I had, and then I would get in my car and go to the coffee shop or go to a friend's house and upload it in 5 minutes, because it would take me 3 hours with that dial-up system. And then after 3 hours, it would fail. So it wouldn't even work anyway. So I would just... And then I had to get a laptop, because I didn't have a laptop. I couldn't take my desktop to some coffee shop and upload, so I had to get a different computer. So it was just coming around.
Yeah, it was.
Just coming around, and that was 2007.
Yeah, and it's been a few years, but mm-hmm. it has certainly changed, and it's only going to get better. And the distribution of this knowledge, of course, will come to a point where people would want to see it more than just hear it. And but yet at this point, everybody likes to hear it because they can do other things, you know.
But I hear some people still cannot listen. I don't know why.
Some
mm-hmm. friends of mine said they can't hear it for some reason. I'm going to have to go over to their house to see what they have and mm-hmm. why they can't listen. It's, you know, an MP3 should be able to. I don't know how old their computer is or what they have, but so if they can't hear it, there's got to be a lot of people who can't hear.
Yeah, well, you can probably port a lot of it over, putting it onto YouTube or something like that, which will be much bigger medium that will become more popular. So many more. And these, of course, are, you know, the ways that things, you know, are driven much more than the technology drives it. It's people driving the technology because they use it. So it's like the internet. It's not the best protocol. The IP protocol wasn't necessarily the best protocol. There were others that were more, I guess more thought was given into the development, but it didn't pan out because they weren't open to everyone. As a result, they couldn't have as many adopters of it just because of the economy of it. That's where Elon Musk. Yeah, he decided to open his patents up. Even if he's got a patent, it really can prevent people from tinkering with it or using his designs.
Yes.
He decided that's not the way to do it, you know. So,
He wanted to get as many electric cars out there as possible.
Right. So share it and open it up. So he's actually pointing the way of the way things will become much more than where they are right now. Remember the old problem that Tesla had? You couldn't put a meter on it. Oh no, it can't. You know, he pulled J.P. Morgan, pulled his funding away, and that ended a lot of research that could have driven toward free energy. Energy that can be pulled literally off the earth. We have versions of it, but not necessarily what he had in store.
It's in his writings. It's in his patents.
Mm-hmm.
It's there to be found, and some people have found it, and it's just hard to present it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get to the right person, and Elon Musk is a champion. He is the person to hand this information to, and he loved Tesla so much he named his car company after the man.
Absolutely, and it may very well become, he's actually showing the characteristics necessary to promote such a thing as free energy.
Well, we'd probably still need batteries in the car just to, you know, pull the energy off of that. But, you know, when it's parked or even running, I don't know how much energy he can pull out of the earth as it's moving, but it is possible. If you can pull it out standing still, you can pull it out moving. And he said the greatest form or the greatest use of his electricity through the air will be flying machines without carrying fuel, because that's one of the most dangerous things about flying or driving a car, is that flammable liquid that powers the device. And we're getting there. I'm just glad to just move forward just a little bit at a time, because we need to get away from burning these fossil fuels. And some people can't even go outside because the air is so polluted. It makes no sense at all to have cars pollute.
Yeah, but they had so much mobility, which is a necessity in terms of developing, higher society. But even the old concept of trains became somewhat more obsolete as people prized freedom a lot more, and freedom to go here or there away from fixed routes. And of course, fixed routes were used at one time for the development of economies. And right now, Hawaii is going through, the growing pains of going through fixed route or fixed rail mass transit. And some people look at that as, quite rightly, as, business leaving their doorstep and heading toward the station, And since they're located nowhere near the station, they're kind of angry that that is being developed. So their businesses are making easily become obsolete. So these are the kinds of hurdles that are necessary in any technology, whether it be free energy, the development of our society. And this is where our friends, and I'm talking about our Shahruns, the group, that are overseeing some of that thing. The Most Highs, of course, the Most High observers are very much aware of these kinds of growing pains. Presently, our planet is in a situation which has placed some of the most terrible convergences of problems, economic, cultural, where people are looking at, leaders of society, leaders, governmental leaders, leaders of nations, enterprises, corporations, are all running into the factors that are pushing this planet into the war mentality. We look at World War Two is actually World War One. Wasn't World War One the war to end all wars?
I believe it was. They started with a lie by sinking the Lusitania.
And
and they found it did have weapons on it.
Yeah.
Years later. Years later. Did. But.
I think it was World War One was they killed, who was it now? Well, anyway, you can go back and look at your history books. But anyway, the idea was that many of these things were a developed, even the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was faked. But the whole idea is there's a convergence of problems, pressures that push people, our societies, corporations, financiers, governments into a war mentality, whether to prevent war or to start war. And we are in right now some of the most terrible pressures, planetary pressures, that could be pushing us into another world war, World War III. And some of these factors are, are numerous wars and convergence of numerous wars, as well as smaller things which are not necessarily called wars, but are still, additive to the entire planetary conflict cycle. I visited Cambodia, and Cambodia is next to Thailand. And Thailand and kind of the Cambodians, they don't like each other. And they got one temple site, which is half Thai, half Cambodian. And you have Cambodian guards on one side of the temple site, and you have Thai guards on the opposite end of the the temple site. And there was a, you know, they have problems. So once in a while, they do shoot at each other. And it's almost like the North Koreans and South Koreans. You know, your neighbors are not friendly to each other. Well, these things are there. These tensions are in place, not just in you know, in the Far East and the Near East, also in the Middle East, also. And you see great powers that are also involved in similar kinds of tensions. So you have those in place. You see the Western powers in Europe, United States, are bankrupt. Essentially, the euro is in under extreme problem right now. And the only place to run to is the dollar, which is, again, something that is not in necessarily in favor by those in Europe, as well as the BRICS, which are Brazil, Russia, India, and China, trying to make their own fiat currency. And there are, you know, finding that that's not working either. So a lot of this world finance is under tremendous pressure. And you have the great rise of superpowers that are brand new to the picture, in a sense that are coming on real strong. And China, of course, is that one. But China is not coming on in terms of their power, world power status, in a very benevolent way. They're going about it in saying, well, just take over the South China Sea, you know, since the South China, you may call it South China Sea, China says it's our China, that's our sea. So they go over there and they make trouble with the, you know, Spratly and Senkuku Islands and also other things. They did things like the deal with Hong Kong. Well, they came on pretty strong to the point where their demonstration in Hong Kong was showing that there's, you know, brewing underneath everything is the dislike for the Chinese attitude, which has, you know, an authoritarian note to it, that they had to put up their own uprising. It's not over. You know, the monetary system, where along with that, which was, you know, China looks at, you know, Hong Kong as their you know, key, you might say, into the doorway of worldwide free enterprise. And they don't understand it. So, but they think they can. So, again, they're a part of this BRICS nation idea of, you know, but what do they look at? They look at this tremendous power that the dollar has. And the dollar's power is not in its fact that it's used as a world currency, international exchange currency, but that it has this tremendous power behind it in terms of military power, global power. And those that had initial global power was not only in the fact of nuclear power, but that nuclear technology was shared with those who could use that nuclear power to develop society and nuclear bombs. So the nuclear powers that are under scrutiny right now, like our failed design in terms of the GE design, which is in the Fukushima Daiichi power plant design, which I also saw in many other parts of the world, where I saw that in Taipei, and that area has a lot of that nuclear power, exact same breeder reactor design.
Of the GE reactor?
Yeah, and I don't know what they're doing with their stuff. They're not a nuclear power. And anyway, but maybe they are, I don't know. But they have the potential. Japan also does. anytime you create that GE design, you know, in fact, it's known that Fukushima was in their storage, waste storage containment, was holding fissionable material, plutonium. So that's all broken. So, you know, all of that is under the watchful eye of the Most Highs. And you're looking at a time when they need to be able to feed the right kind of attitudes back into the world. And people on the planet will have to have their own time to change their minds, and to have their reset in their mental consciousness to change the paradigm. The paradigm is actually very, very powerful. And like I said earlier, other times, we didn't have to go and follow the boiling pot design of nuclear reactors. But what was the tipping point was we could make nuclear bombs with the waste, or we could create the fissionable material out of, and at the same time have nuclear energy. Well, on that very same table was the molten salt design, which lost all funding, and because it couldn't, you know, protect the powerful U.S. dollar's global position, which always had that, we'll always come and back you guys up if you play with us. And we're looking at energy and finance right now, and our food, and we have powerful food entities that try to rule the food market coming out of the United States. And these were creating a type of genetically modified organisms that want and have as a goal to control the entire global food marketplace, food supply, essentially after that. And they've been kind of headed off. So we're seeing a lot of these controversies, which are feeding into the war mentality. The planet is, you know, if you can't do it in a nice way, then maybe you have to get it in a more powerful way. So these superpowers are kind of confused in how to get this all straightened out.
I wonder if they're really confused, or they just pretend they're confused and do whatever they want.
They end up trying to do whatever they want, but whatever, for the present position, this is where Elon Musk's mentality comes in. Now, he almost went bankrupt a couple of times in developing the Tesla, but he got his initial funding from the success in, what was his initial success?
Well, he made a program that he sold when he was a kid, and then he sold one for another program for $300 million, and then he sold, and I forget who bought that, but they're still in action. Then he and his partner made PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he—that's what launched his funding for Tesla Motors and for SpaceX.
Right. But in PayPal, what did he do? He created another type of currency, based on currency, but another type. People think of it as a type of credit card, but it's a different kind of currency. Oh, you can use.
It's still the same currency. It's just a way, instead of, you know, oh, I want to buy this on eBay, and instead of sending a check and then having it clear, and that takes a long time.
But he did. What he did was he made it easy to do, but it's one step away moving into a different type of e-currency. You know, so. It could have fed in other types of currencies, but he's not. It's not in his hand anymore. But he, from all of these things, are learning, and he's learning a lot. He's watching a lot. So this is an idea. You're looking at a personality, an individual that is astute enough to learn from his, both his success as well as his mistakes. And this is an indicator that our world is about to be transformed. But prior to the transformation are these tensions. And the tensions that are talked about in terms of economic tensions, power tensions. You have the idea that, you know, you want it your way, whether, you know, which could be Russ's motive into getting its way with others, its neighbors, it's your formerly their friend, they're part of their socialist group, which was a failure. So they're now looking at being a part of this grand play of functioning, but the functioning within the society of the world has a lot to do with profitability. Elon Musk almost went bankrupt a whole bunch of times, yet was able to pull his way out of it through, one of it was just plain determination. And then inviting as many who wanted to come on board to the point where he could take it to take it public away from his private thing and allow participation, which allowed Tesla to become, you know, valid again as a motor company, because it allowed more people to play the game. Mm-hmm. With him, and then he's going to take other routes. And other people who are entrepreneur, but not so much purely profit motivated. And these are the new generation who are looking toward feeding the paradigm, the new paradigm, the new way of doing things, which has to do with transitioning away from monolithic control of the powers that be. If you're locked into the grid, then you're locked into the powers that be, which are generating the energy one way or the other, and they come back to our control of energy, which could be, a lot of times it's oil, fossil fuels. And if you come back to energy, well, then it's the financiers in terms of nuclear energy, which are feeding the solidity of the, which was once described as the infrastructure of militarianism, you know. Now we're moving, you know, we're seeing other straightforward factors. And the rise, we talked about China making a step into Hong Kong, which they were legitimately giving Hong Kong back from British rule. And then they kind of starting to stretch out with their ideas. Well, this is not only coming from China, but the idea of many other, you might say, governments or countries on the planet are trying to rise up and stretch their arm, they stretch their power out. Also, the need for taxation. People are, governments are desiring to push heavy taxations on people to keep them solvent as a government. But if they don't, they fall apart. And this whole falling apart is in place. And another factor was the control of people's personal lives. You might say Big Brother poking their nose into that through many, 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 many different. Today, you know, digital technology, the internet, is just one extra area in which the monitoring of a person's life is made open in the books. I mean, you know, talking about smart grid, smart meters, people, you know, turning on, you know, having a way of getting into a person's home and monitoring their lifestyle. You know, they've got their TV on at this time. They got their microwave cooking there. It's just every little thing. And it says, oh, these guys, we know when they come. We know when they go. We know when they turn their lights on and turn their lights. These kinds of things. Well, take it further, and pretty soon they got pegs on everything. All that information will become networked and become very, very troublesome. But supposedly easy for those that want to control things. So, you know, that next step would become, of course, the legalities, or not, you know, because of certain things, you can't do certain things at a certain time because you want to level the playing field. Mm-hmm. And things can become to the point where you can't do things at a certain time. If there's a failure in one segment or the other of feeding the economy, and people, you know, or the power grid isn't able to sustain itself because of one thing or another, then it can come in and say, you know, you're breaking the law by running your toaster at the wrong time of day. You know, all kinds of crazy ideas about control of people's lives can come in because of information exchange. And yeah.
Your house is too warm, and you're using too much heat, and we're going to shut off your heater.
Right.
That's what they can do with those smart meters.
Right. Exactly.
I don't know how they can shut off your heater, but I.
Well, they can just shut off your whole house too.
Well, that may be so, but your headset still clicks. That clicking, I thought originally was your chair, but Michael and I talked about that a couple hours ago, but that's still clicking. Let me read what Millie had to say. She was talking about your microphone, but this is October 6th. She writes, subject is, I enjoy your program. Hello, Curtis and Michael. I've listened to your program for quite a number of years. After a while, I quit listening because the audio was so bad, it almost hurt to try to listen. Remember those days? Anyway, I'm glad they're over with. More recently, I've come back and am enjoying the better audio, even as Michael drifts to and away from the microphone. Sometimes it just sounds that way, but Michael has a headset on. She continues by saying, since your listeners frequently have questions about the Urantia book, I thought I would tell you about a resource that they might find useful. I found a study group 5 or 6 years ago and joined in the monthly reading and discussions. The hostess for the group was a child of some of the original receivers of the book. That said, you know, she is older now and she can no longer host the group. The group morphed into an online Skype twice a week meeting, and the facilitator records the meeting and puts them on the website called Fifth Apocalypse Revelation Fellowship. There's also another site, AtlantaUrantiaStudyGroup.org. On Sundays, we study the Jesus Papers, and on Wednesdays, we are going through the book from the front. The Reverend Roger Paul is the facilitator for the project, Dr. Roger W. Paul. And she has his address here, Dr. Roger Paul at AtlantaUrantiaStudyGroup.org. I hope this information will be helpful to those who, like me, struggled with the information in the book. Keep up the good work, and thank you for hosting the program. Love, light, and laughter. I am Millie. And then in parentheses, she says, yes, the same Millie who transcribed Hour 4. Thank you, Millie. That was nice to hear from you once again, and I'm glad you're back listening. The audio in the beginning was pretty bad. Actually, Michael, it was 146 hours, I think, of audio, of analog audio. And now digital is just terrific. And how about if I go to this one from Randall? Or maybe I should hear Randall is one older than that is. Oh, Nedim. Yeah, September 30th. Let me read this one. Subject is question about adjuster fusion. Dear Curtis and Michael, in the Arantia book, I found two parts that raised some questions on adjuster fusion. And then from the Urantia book, 10:6.2, from the seventh to the third circle, there occurs increased and unified action of the seventh of the seven adjutant mind spirits in the task of weaning the mortal mind from its dependence on the realities of the material life mechanisms proprietary to increased introduction to morontial levels of experience. From the third circle onward, the adjutant influence progressively diminishes. And then 10:7.1, the achievement of the seven psychic circles does not equal adjuster fusion. There are many mortals living on Urantia who have attained their circles, but fusion depends on their yet another greater and more sublime spiritual achievements upon the attainment of a final and complete attunement of the mortal will with the will of God as it is resident in the adjuster, in the thought adjuster. Can the celestials offer any insight into the greater and more sublime spiritual achievements? I would imagine that complete fusion, even after reaching communication with our thought adjuster, might just be a shock to our system. But the Urantia book does say that beyond the first circle, mind becomes increasingly akin to the intelligence of the morantial stage of evolution. So in the sense we would be able to manipulate morantial energy prior to fusion, and would that new morantial energy and senses help us overcome some aspects of morantial life? Thanks, and I look forward to listening to tonight's show. Signed, Nedim. Thank you, Nedim. I think you spoke a little bit about the adjuster fusion last week, but maybe you can...
I'd like to, you know, just point out a little bit on adjuster fusion. One of the important factors that is that when a person attains the first circle, doesn't necessarily guarantee or even imply that fusion should take place immediately at that point. Actually, there's a tremendous amount of activity that goes on at that point of attaining that first inner circle. And this is someplace that I refused to believe until I saw that I had reached it. But why and how it happens is a journey, a true living journey. And an ideal of moving in that journey is a personal experience, and it is not the same for everyone. But one of the important factors is if you want to and can, you can follow some of the journeys in the life of Christ. If you look at that, the development of that from the baptism of John, it was thought that at that point it should have resulted in fusion. Christ should have fused. But at that point, it was a journey of sharing and development and teaching. one in which is significant in terms of everyone who actually attains this first circle, inner domain of near fusion. What happens at that point is continuous inspiration. Continuous inspiration is a point in which our minds are not lonesome anymore. Our thoughts are not lonesome anymore. They're continually fused and infused with knowledge and wisdom. These things are spoken of by many who have attained the first circle. And it was spoken of by those who of old did, but their lives didn't necessarily always point out perfection. Even as you looked at Christ's sufferings, many of them were pointing out his imperfection in the light of another standard. And that standard, of course, being many times recorded biblically, were the standard of Judaism, the law. But the truth is that those who attain that first circle actually attain the law in which is to be gained. In other words, the fulfillment of the law, or to become infilled with wisdom. And wisdom is that point in which you no longer again are lonesome in knowledge and truth. You gain much through life experience, but also life guidance. Guidance that comes through making the choices that are not lonesome. Remember, I often spoke of sometimes where a person would sit down and in a time where they may be perplexed in terms of what to do, would say, "Oh God, now what do I do?" in frustration. But in that point of reflection, they receive an answer. And as that is built upon, that answer becomes this infused area of development. That infused area of development continues and continues and continues until they become more and more divine in their nature. This is how that first circle operates as a person lives their lives, extending that beyond their personal domain into the lives of others is an essential element of the characteristic of, you might say, the love of the from the first source and center, the love of God, the Christ in us, the love of Jesus, the love that needs to become shared. And that is that volumetric element that is beyond our capacity. And that is one in which is beyond our abilities in terms of mortal abilities, what was born in us. So in the walk and development, we exchange characteristics, we exchange life experience, we make our journeys inward, and at the innermost point, we are fully embraced. And you might say the gate is open. Think of that gate as a valve. When you connect your garden hose to the hose bib, until that gate opens, no water flows out of your hose. Now, what happens in that first circle is much like opening the hose, opening the water to your hose. And as you turn that valve on, water flows. It can flow suddenly, or it can flow in a well-controlled manner. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it is flowing out of control or under absolute control. It is a guess. In much of the similar sense, as you open your life up, your innermost being up to the spirit of wisdom, the capacity and nature of the divine spirit of compassion, spirit of foresight, spirit which builds and installs intelligence. All of these, which are incumbent upon desiring the godly nature, the nature of the divine, they begin to flow and flow through you and can and do manifest themselves in reality that are both physical and spiritual, tangible and yet intangible, transitioning to a level which you might call Marantia. Marantia is a level which is somewhere in between our purely physical and that which is purely spiritual or none of this dimension. You might say some of the characteristics that are held in our mind and experience and emotions are elements that are impressed upon the Marantia reality and are shared and bonded to the Marantia character that we possess. But they also are developed and in within and of the first circle are all of these characteristics which are mixed in ourselves, in our body, in our consciousness, in our mind. We look at that and we say, where did that come from? Well, when we say that, we already know that it is not from our limited mind, but from a much more greater divine source that all of such knowledge comes from. And this is part and only part of the element of what flows through that gate. Once in that first circle, we are able to turn on that gate. We play with it. We move it. We take that water that flows freely from that hose and we use it in ways to embellish the lives of others. And as we embellish the lives of others, they don't know why. Many times they just like you. They just like to be watered of that water of life. And many who are of the dark side, who do not enjoy the sharing, instead they only care about the taking, they hate this feeling. So do not find it a strange thing when some will enjoy your word, enjoy your presence, enjoy your touch, enjoy your friendship, where others hate that and disdain and turn their way away from you. Because this is part of the division that this planet is suffering under. It is not a pure place that you are in. We suffer, we struggle to find the light and truth.
Yeah, we do.
This is Naharaktu Arnasha Arun. I spoke through Michael, and I still do, because I have first been with him the longest. I am, as you might say, an embracer of him. Part of his character in development is mine. Therefore, remember that the many personalities shared, seven distinct ones, are all part of the whole. Enjoy your way. Live well. Wow. I knew you started talking after a while.
Wow, Sharon came on for about a minute.
Yeah.
Or less than a minute.
Well, he was on for quite a bit. In fact, most of the talk, which was higher in level was just his way of, because he does always reflect. And this is one of the natures of the Morantia development, that we find wisdom through conversation with our innermost man, mm-hmm. thought adjuster, which emblaze characteristics are shared through adjuster coordination and a bit of adjuster sharing, you might say. But this is part of, you know, the character of becoming truly a divine son, when you don't no longer need the physical realm, because the physical realm is much, much, much too limiting. It's limited, limited, limited. But it is essential in terms of getting the message across. This is why the Shahruns requested my help, because although they can take material form, it is not the way, because they would be perceived as either demons or gods, you know, or angels. This is not what it's about. It's about understanding the truth that every human being can understand and walk in and develop towards. And that's the point. You know, we gotta develop toward this divinity attainment. An ascension process is all a process. It's not just an explosive event, but it does start many times by quite an emotional event, a sudden event. You know, sometimes, you know, it can, and sometimes it can develop over a longer period. But it's, you know, personal.
So was that you, or was that Sharon who was talking about the opening the valve for the first circle?
It's a blend, because he was searching for a analogy. So we're gonna talk about the hose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he used it. You might say underlying that conscious change in the converse, see how slow our communication is. You know, speaking and slow, methodical.
Yeah, but back and forth.
Yeah, and yet underlying it can be essentially a subroutine running. You know, a commune or mind sharing that's going on, and it's a tremendous amount of information. So, yeah, that's even always when it comes down to them introducing themselves mm-hmm. in the beginning, or not introducing themselves and just simply taking on. It is because I am their agent. I might say an agent that allows for that, and as this agent, they are able to give their information the way they would want it to be shared, which is at a level which we can understand. Any other level than that is a failure. You know, it's always at a level which we can understand. So even if you talk in too hyperbolical terms, you know, too specialized words. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not in their agenda. It's not for them. You know, though they may not necessarily find one word that can describe perhaps the entire sentence or a couple of sentences, they can and will prefer the couple of sentences that will describe what could be described with one special word. If we don't know what that word is, there's no sense in speaking it. This is the difficulty in the Urantia book. And the Urantia book, of course, is a book of words, you know. But most importantly, for the Urantia book and those who read the Urantia book, you can take it in terms of a good and reliable source, because it was not me who bumped into the Yantra book. The Yantra book was gifted, the knowledge of the Yantra book was gifted to me in light of my experience with celestials, as well as, you might call them aliens, but high teachers. And I find that they were exactly recorded. Their names are very, very similar, if not identical, to that descriptive in the Urantia book. Yeah. So, yeah, in fact, the idea of the Urantia book was, something that I tried to remember, and it was related to Earth, so I tried to put a Earth in terms of it. And then if I ever heard a book of Uras or Urantia, I'd realize, I remember now. Yes. So that memory trick did work, you know. So, and those who say Urantia, it's wrong. It's Urantia. Yeah.
Urantia.
Urantia. Yeah. There's a lot of other variants, but it doesn't matter. Most importantly is, even with the celestials, in part telepathic, part acoustic translation or communication, as long as you get the idea. I remember them talking about, I'm asking, how did we get through the asteroid belt without crashing into asteroids? You know. Remember watching those old sci-fi movies, and they have sometimes they go through the asteroid belt, and they gotta go get, you know, dodge asteroids or something.
Right. It's out there.
Yeah, it's really there. And he said we went around them, and immediately I thought about, you know, like flying a plane around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so did I.
Yeah, he said, and he comes back and he tells me, not like how you're thinking. And then I said, how? And then he said, well, then he began to slam me with some hyperdimensional physics. So this is something that may actually have bearing on our understanding of Urantia. Urantia material is not found on our planet. It is a implied or an imputed material, imputed with transdimensional properties that are part of life force. Life force is very, very different. I mean, life force is something that we still haven't figured out what it is. But life force is real. It is and can be imputed to all living material, because there's a definite difference between something alive and something dead. And with Urantia material, it is actually applied toward what might be called normal material, and it be imputed into it, and it becomes Urantia in part. So it is no longer associated directly in our time space domain. It is disassociated, but it needs to be associated in order to be real. Therefore, it is in part associated and in part not associated, primarily with time. That is where Einstein's relativistic, the idea of being time and space relativity, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity, it has a lot to do with time and velocity and time. But if you are no longer associated directly, even indirectly to a relativistic concept, then you are moving toward the Marantia plane, where much of the technology that they have, which is extremely highly advanced, is and is functional in, and which has a lot to do with why we develop our characteristics and how we can. Their science began to study life as we study life, and their science began to unravel their mysteries of life to the point of understanding Marantia capabilities. And then at a certain point, they began to be introduced to the high teachers and the high order beings. Not all planets are at developmental levels that are stay purely at a material level. You know, sort of like how we kind of have a paranormal kind of idea of where the reality really transitions to, and it's sort of like this dim twilight zone place. And it is for us, but in those that have been, you might say, graduated to, it's not a twilight zone. It is another domain of light. So when this domain of light and life literally envelops a society, this society becomes part way Marantia. Yeah, and their technologies have become much, much more alive.
Partway Rancha. Well, getting closer.
Partway Marantia. Marantia.
Partway Marantia.
Yeah, which, in other words, there's spirit in it. There's spirit in it, and you might say life force in it. Yeah. Yeah, this new and living way was what was to be introduced by Christ. But many times, you know, the people would take this new and living way, unable to express this Marantia, expressed it in some more ordinances, some more ceremony, more majesty, and more glamour and glitter. And this is the problem with humanity in a physical realm, trying to display Marantia without being able to share it in terms of what it really is. So if you are able to walk in the process from the most outer circle, the seventh circle, proceeding in, making that choice, at the seventh circle, that you are to find divinity, you want to find God, and you will start to process. You begin to act like a civilized being versus just an animal, or just trying to satisfy basic instinctive needs, food, shelter, clothing. You start moving past that until you start making choices that are building upon the enriching characteristics of life and life that can be shared with others in art and expression and in intelligence and literary science and all of these, you know, what people in our society call higher education. Actually, it's lower education. But actually moving into those higher realm of education, high school, and all that basic, these are part of the earlier or outer rings of development. They follow in part closely with Maslow's hierarchy of human need, which Abraham Maslow kind of discovered actually categorized some of the earlier, which sort of parallels some of the earlier rings of development. But moving along and towards the more spiritual aspects and gaining affinity and invitation, opening the actual heart. You see, our heart domain, in order for us to get more out of our psychic development, requires a actual dying to ourselves. This is a kind of converse. We got to die to the physical man first in order to gain the higher realm, the real living. And by so doing, in that death experience, we enlarge the gate or the opening toward the divinity nature, the divine nature, which expresses itself in the personality development of divinity in us. Because our will of personal selfish development has been overturned by our submission toward the divine nature. And as we submit ourselves toward this, and we also, not because it is imposing itself upon us as an outward force contrary to our will, but more like a loving embrace. And that loving embrace continues in itself over and over as we submit toward it. And there are times in which, in order to gain even more of this higher loving embrace, there may be challenges that we find ourselves in because some of our characteristics are preventing our development. And these things will go, you might say, under the sculptor's chisel and chisel away some of the, or polish away some of the imperfections in our character. Not according to how another human would judge it, which is the same as I said, Christ was judged by other characteristics other than the divine. So they labeled him, of course, the most imperfect human around, who hung him on and killed him, yet in its true divine nature was absolutely divine. Now, this is the same road we're on. And having the chance to express it through the personal development of attainment, will incur outside wisdom as part of the water that flows through that hose that we open the gate. This is outside wisdom, and it only makes use of, we can only make use of it if we're humble enough to realize that it is not ours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's that loving embrace. That's we'll get there.
Oh, you get that every time. You get that every time, even if you are being disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a true character, because characteristic and character of the nature of divinity is installing himself in our lives. And it's something that I hope that we can fully attain, then project. This perfect love, perfection in even projecting this wonderful, wonderful love. And I don't know if I'll be able to attain that level which I experienced, and that was when I was absolutely terrified being with them when they had me essentially lying down on a like a gurney or a hard bed, you might say, immobilized. I couldn't move, And they wanted me to, you know, to observe me for a while before they came. And
you were terrified.
Because I couldn't move. And I knew that I was with people who were not human. Mm-hmm. And I was also angry because I was praying that God would come or send some emissary, some representative. But I expected somebody in white with wings or something like an angel, you know. Mm-hmm. And instead, I get these guys that come around, and they're white though. They're kind of cool looking. They're white. I get taken up in this beautiful blue light on a conveyor, but then I meet these guys, and they're not human. They've got big eyes, and I'm getting afraid because I can't move. Why can't I move? And I get, you know, some guy gets stuck in there. They walk out of the room, and in comes this guy that's dressed in a monk's kind of a cloak, got a hood, you know, kind of a darker brown color. And he's very human looking, but he doesn't say a word. Then he walks away, and in comes Nella. And I said, ah. And she starts talking with me, and then I'm terrified, and she knows I am. Tan walks in, and he's all red. You know, his face is real red. And it's like, oh, my goodness. This guy's spooky. And I'm really getting terrified. And she tells him, and I can hear her tell him, you're making him afraid. Go away. And I said, and he walked, okay, and he walks away. And I'm still looking at her, and says, Michael, don't be afraid. And at that point, when she said Michael, she addressed me, Michael. Oh, an influx of pure love just poured into me. No, like, tell me that again. It was, there's no fear. Everything just washed away, was gone completely, driven out. And she said, yeah, you don't have to be afraid. So then I said, okay. How do you know my name? And then the whole story begins where she shows me way back in the crib, how they visited me back then, and, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we'll continue this next Tuesday. Thank mm-hmm. you once again, and getting close to that perfect love and that loving embrace, we want to hear more about that. So, aloha, Michael.
Aloha.
Okay, see you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.